Hello, I'm John MacArthur. Glad you found Grace to You on podcast or streaming audio. I trust you'll be encouraged by today's lesson. Let us know what you think. Write to letters@gty.org and be sure to follow us on Facebook. Thanks for getting in touch. Now enjoy the broadcast.
When would it be wrong for a Christian to earn, say, $1 million a year? And when would there be nothing wrong with that? John MacArthur examines the overarching principle that needs to guide you where money is concerned. That's next on Grace to You. Ever wonder why some Christians make lots of money while other men and women devoted to God struggle to pay their bills? If you're in the first category, if you prosper financially, is that a sign of God's blessing? Or could wealth actually create more problems for you? We'll get the biblical perspective on money today on Grace to You as John MacArthur shows you how to handle your finances in the study called Whose Money Is It Anyway? Now, to make sure that you're thinking about your resources in the right way, using it for God's glory, stay with us now as John MacArthur begins today's lesson.
In 1 Timothy 6:10, it says, "The love of money is a root of all sorts of evil." It's not money that is the root of evil. It is the love of it. And some people have a lot of it and don't love it, and some have none and love it like crazy. It's the love of it. And the love of money produces lots of things. First of all, it brings problems. When you love money, you want money, you're motivated by money, you're trying to get rich, achieve money, get wealth, rather than be concerned about how well you do something, you're concerned about how rich you're going to get doing it. Verse 9 of 1 Timothy 6 says, "But those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare and many foolish and harmful desires which plunge men into ruin and destruction." And then in verse 10 it says, "And some by longing for money have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many a pain." Many a pain. That's why millionaires don't smile. It brings all kinds of problems and worries and anxieties and temptations and traps. Secondly, love of money makes you forget God. We remember, of course, Proverbs 30, where it says, "Give me neither poverty nor riches. Why? Lest I be full and deny thee and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be in want and steal and profane the name of my God." I don't want more than I need. I don't want less than I need. I don't want to be in a position where if I have more than I need, I trust in my riches and forget God. Love of money can lead people to forget God. What do they need God for? They've got it all. They command their lives. It's all in the bank. They have plenty. There's no dependency there. Third thing I might say about the love of money is that when you love money, you begin to trust in it. And that's kind of what we were just saying. You not only forget God, but you turn your affection toward your money. We say, "Hey, I don't have anything to worry about. I'm set. Everything is great in my life. I've got my bank account built up. I've hedged against every conceivable dilemma that could come along in the future. I've provided for everything as well as I can provide and maybe a little left over. I can take care of myself. I've got all the money I need for the rainy day. I'm covered on every front." And then you have to ask the question, am I trusting in God or am I trusting in my gold? Now, I'm not saying it's wrong to have some savings. I'm not saying it's wrong to have an insurance policy. But what I am saying is that when you love money, you will begin to trust money and not God. In Job 31, Job, and he knew what it was to have it and what it was to lose it. Job 31, 24 and following, "If I have put my confidence in gold, if I have gloated because my wealth was great, I would have denied God above. If I trust in my riches, I don't trust in God." And I can honestly tell you, I want to be in my life in a place where I need to trust God. Because I love the joy of seeing God work in that time. And the Lord does such wonderful things. Proverbs 11:28 says, "He who trusts in his riches will fall." The somewhat liberated Living Bible chooses to translate that this way: trust in your money, and down you go. And the rest of the verse says, trust in God and flourish like a tree. And 1 Timothy 6, verse 17 says, Command them that are rich in this world not to be proud nor trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God. Trust in the living God. He later on says, tell the rich to be rich in good works. Tell them to be eager to distribute their riches and willing to share, verse 18. Sadly, sometimes the more money people have, the less they're willing to part with it. Riches seem to obscure their perspective, and they tend to isolate them. Rich people tend to get more and more isolated because their world is more and more insulated, and the walls around their house are wider, the fences around their yard are broader, and their isolated world is a world that doesn't touch those who struggle with the little things in life. And so they're cut off from those in need, so busy bumping elbows with those who have no need. It's easy to lose perspective. It's easy to begin to trust in your money and not trust God. A fourth thought about loving money is that it's easy to be deceived. Money is very deceptive. In fact, Mark 4:19 and Matthew 13 talks about the deceitfulness of riches, which chokes the word. Riches lie. They deceive. When you have money, you can easily think you have everything. It lulls you into the deception that all is well in your life. And some people might even think of these people running around preaching this prosperity gospel that if you're rich, that means that God likes you extra special. And you're in abundant favor with God because you have a lot of money. So everything must be okay with you. I mean, if you go to someone and you say, you know, I just want you to know that I think this is a false teacher. It's not uncommon for someone in that movement, a movement of the prosperity gospel, to say, well, how can you say he's a false teacher when God has made him so rich? God must be pleased. Riches can deceive you about spiritual reality. They can deceive you about whether or not you are being blessed. Riches can steal your heart. They can deceive you about what's important in life. And then another point, a love of money can lead a person to the place where they compromise convictions, compromise the Bible, compromise the Word. It's been said that every man has his price. And I suppose we've all been asked the question, what's your price? That's the price at which you compromise your convictions. And it's like that story of the author who was at the New York dinner party in a high-class New York hotel. And he was sitting next to a beautiful woman. He was stunned by her beauty, and he couldn't take his eyes off her. And eventually, he leaned over to her during the meal and asked if she would spend the night with him for $100,000. And rather demurely, you know, she dropped her face and looked up at him and said, well, blushingly, yes. To which he replied, well, would you spend the night with me for $10? And she said, what do you think I am? He said, we've already established that. We're only dickering for the price. I suppose that everybody in the world has their price. Christians shouldn't have a price. You know, some people would lie to get a job promotion. Some people would falsify some documentation or an application. Some would mute the testimony of Jesus in order to be popular. That's selling out. Some people will sell out to be thought of as intellectual. Some people will sell out to gain some possession or to be accepted by some well-known or prominent person or whatever. It's amazing through the years. I've had a responsibility through the years to raise a lot of money. I never thought when I was a young man called to the ministry in the seminary that I would ever have to be responsible to raise money. Nobody ever told me that. But that happens, folks, all the time in my life. When you have a church and you start out with one little building over here and a little education building, and this place was covered with chicken coops. We've had to raise a tremendous amount of money to build this church. We've had to do that in terms of the development of our radio and tape ministry and around the world, our missions work around the world, the master's college and the master's seminary. And there's never extra, and you're always just on your knees and praying. And occasionally someone will come along with a promise that they'll make the money available if. You'd be surprised how many people have asked me if I would be willing to tone down my convictions or even to take a different theological viewpoint. It happens. It's amazing. If I would be willing to sign on, change my views about what I believe the Bible teaches, people would be glad to give money. Well, that's a temptation, isn't it? That's a test to see what your price is. You shouldn't have one. There isn't a point in your life when you're willing to compromise convictions, compromise what you know the Bible teaches, what you know God wants, what you know is true for anything, monetary or earthly. And that's where you've got to go back to Matthew 6 and seek first the kingdom, right? Nothing competes with that. But when people love money, they sell out for money. They compromise their convictions. It happens all the time. I watch ministries do that. I watch well-known large ministries have huge donors who come in and force them to change their convictions to get the money. Very common. Well, another thought, loving money can lead you to build on an unstable foundation. It's what we said a little earlier, you know, put your hope in money and down you go. To look at Proverbs 23, verses 4 and 5, it says it this way, when you set your eyes on wealth, it is gone. Wealth certainly makes itself wings like an eagle that flies toward the heavens. It just comes and goes, comes and goes, comes and goes, and flies away. And when you try to build your life on it, it's sinking sand. It's like building a skyscraper on the beach with no foundation. Absolute folly. Loving money will lead you to build on an unstable foundation. The only stable foundation is the truth and the love of God and the glory of God. Well, there's another one. Love of money can make you proud. It does. Boy, it's hard to control your ego when you have money because there's so many ways to parade it. You can parade it through your house. You can parade it through your lifestyle through so many ways. It makes you feel self-sufficient. It makes you feel superior. It makes you feel elevated above the hoi polloi, the common folks. In Deuteronomy 8, it says this, beware lest you forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments and his ordinances and his statutes, which I am commanding you today, lest when you have eaten and are satisfied and have built good houses and lived in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply and your silver and gold multiply and all that you have multiplies, then your heart becomes proud. It's not wrong to have your flocks multiply. God isn't saying you can't have a good house. God isn't saying you can't live in it and you can't have some silver and gold. What he is saying is you, when that happens and you love that and you forget God, then your heart becomes proud. If you see it as a gracious gift from him to be used for his glory and the advance of his kingdom and the benediction and blessing of all those around you, that's a right perspective. But Proverbs 28:11 is right when it says, the rich man is wise in his own conceit. With riches comes pride. Unless you deal with that, your riches lead you to that sin. In fact, Jeremiah, in speaking about the rich, said of them, thou, speaking of God, art near to their lips, but far from their mind. It's very superficial, their concern about you. They're into money. With your mouth, you worship God, but there's no room for him in your mind, your heart. And then just a couple of final things. When you consider money as your God, and when you, in an idolatrous way, worship money or love money, you are stealing from God. You will not do what is right. You will not render to God what is God's. You will rob God. Malachi 3, will a man rob God? I mean, look, it's a pretty stupid thing when you think about it. If somebody asked you the question, if God were around, would you rob him? Well, I don't think so. First of all, he's omniscient, so he'd know what I was doing. Secondly, he's omnipotent, so he'd probably kill me if I tried to rob him. I wouldn't rob him. Well, if Jesus were here, Jesus is our Lord, and he had a purse with some money in it, would you rob Jesus? Oh, are you kidding? Rob Jesus? It's a paralyzing thought. I don't even want to think it. Well, you do it. That's the point of the question. Will a man rob God? I mean, is that dumb or is that dumb? Yet you have robbed me. And the people say, well, how have we robbed you? And he says, in tithes and offerings, you haven't given what is mine, what belongs to me. So he says, bring all the tithes into the storehouse, and I will pour out on you a blessing. I love that because he could have said, bring it in or else I'll chop your head off. But he doesn't. It's a very gracious act of loving kindness. Just bring it, and I'm waiting to unload the blessing. Boy, you say, I'll tell you one thing, I'll never rob God. Oh, boy, not me. I'd never rob Jesus. Oh? You know, you say, well, where's the storehouse? I don't know. Great Western Savings? First Interstate Bank? Your sock in the closet? Your pocket? Your mutual fund? I don't know where. The storehouse is wherever the stuff's stored, isn't it? But there's supposed to be some of it in God's storehouse. And if it isn't there, you've robbed him. And when you love money, you rob God. So when you rob God, it's because you, what? Love money. Well, a last point along the line of loving money, you not only rob God, you rob others. 1 John 3, a couple of verses there really make this crystal clear. Verse 17, whoever has the world's goods and beholds his brother in need and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him? The question is, if you don't give money to someone in need, are you a what? Christian. That's the question. That's the question. Because the love of God abides in every believer. Is that not true? Doesn't Romans 5 say that the love of God has been shed abroad in our hearts? So the question is, if you see someone have need and you don't meet the need, how can we say you're a Christian? How can we say you're a Christian? You're robbing your brother. And how can Christians be recognized? Verse 14, we know that we have passed out of death into life because we love the brethren. He who does not love abides in death. I mean, if you can see a brother in need and not meet the need, the question is, are you a Christian? Loving money will make you behave like a non-Christian. That's the bottom line. Well, loving money leads to all kinds of negative results, and we've just gone through a number of them. Now, to close, there's a third point. I talked about the morality of money. I talked about the love of money. Now, let me talk about acquiring money. I'm going to tell you how to acquire money. I'm going to tell you how to earn money God's way, how to get money God's way. But first, I want to tell you how not to get it. Okay? Let me give you some ways not to get money. One, you're not to steal it. You say, well, I know that. Well, just to reiterate that, let him that stole steal no more, Paul said. Robbery is a violation of the Ten Commandments. Don't steal money. You say, I would never steal money. Oh, how about Psalm 37:21? The wicked borrows and never pays back. What's that? That's an act of wickedness. There are lots of ways to steal. Amos 8:5, Hosea 12:7 talk about dishonest business tactics. Cheating people out of their money, overcharging people, selling them a cheapened product. I suppose if we had a few contemporary Amoses and Hoseas today, they might preach a sermon on giving 4 hours work for 8 hours pay. Or they might preach a sermon on exaggerating the deductions on your income tax form. Or they might give a sermon on padding your expense account. Or they might give a sermon on extravagant credit card purchases that are way beyond your capability. And there's money you don't even have and really can't even pay. Stealing money is incompatible with a Christian life, and there are lots of ways to do it. But you're not to get money that way. And you're not to take it from people by cheating them in any sense. A second way not to get money is by charging people exorbitant interest. The Bible is very clear about this. You can read about it all throughout the Old Testament. I'm not going to take you through all the passages. It's called usury, U-S-U-R-Y. It means exorbitantly high interest. You say, well, look, if the guy doesn't want to borrow the money, then he can go borrow it somewhere where it's cheaper. That isn't the point. The point is usury is a form of extortion that preys on people who have no choice. If you want to borrow money for something, your house, your car, or whatever purpose you want to borrow money, You go to a place, you demonstrate your financial capability by filling out a form. You show them that you have the resources and the income and the financial capability to pay that debt off. You're simply buying money because you need it now and you're willing to pay for it in the future. That's fine. But that's not where usury comes into play. You're going to go out and you've got a good credit record, so you're going to get the best interest you can get and you're going to prove to people you can pay it. Usury is what is charged people who are without the ability to pay back. In other words, they are desperate. They're those kinds of people who have nowhere to turn, and so they're taken advantage of by people because they can't qualify anywhere. Certain places will loan the money. Certain people will loan the money and charge them an exorbitant rate of interest. They have really no choice because they're in a desperate situation. And in the midst of their need, there is a taking advantage. That's what the Bible forbids. That's usury. Exorbitant interest charged to someone who is in real need. Don't ever loan money to someone in need. Give it to him. Just give it to him. Give him what he needs, if you can. Don't make money off his trials. And then another way not to earn money is by defrauding people. For example, in James 5, very serious statement with this regard in verse 4, behold, the pay of the laborers who mowed your fields, could be the guy who mowed your grass for us, or whoever works for us, the pay of the laborers who mowed your fields and which has been withheld by you. Okay, you owe this person for what they've done and you haven't paid them. It cries out against you, and the outcry of those who did the harvesting has reached the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth. Here you've got these people. They came and they plowed, or they harvested your field. They worked for you, and you're not paying them. You're not paying them. And the cry against you is coming to the Lord's ears. This is serious. If somebody has rendered service to you, worked for you, been employed by you, you pay them what is owed them and what is promised them. To hold that back is to send a cry of defrauding up to the very ears of God Himself. Well, we could say more about that, but let me give you a last one. Another way not to make money is by gambling. Gambling is not an option for the Christian. An appeal to chance is incompatible with trust in the sovereignty of God. An appeal to chance is a way to waste the resources God has given you. And frankly, gambling, for the most part, is an exploitation of the poor. And all it does is draw the money out of the people who have little to start with, funnel it through a bureaucracy like the state lottery, and with the ostensible purpose of the state using it to assist those poor people, but by the time it gets back to them, it's one-tenth of what it was when they gave it or when they bought the ticket. It is exploitation. It risks God's provision. It is incompatible with the sovereignty of God. So we don't get money these false ways, by illicit means, stealing it, by taking it from people in need, by defrauding those we owe it to, or by gambling.
How much of your life revolves around the pursuit of money? And how willing are you to be dishonest to get it? Practical questions from John MacArthur's lesson today on Grace to You, a part of his study that's helping you think biblically about the money you have. It's titled, Whose Money Is It Anyway? John, today you outline 9 qualities that describe those who love money, folks who build their lives around the pursuit of wealth. Would it be fair to add a 10th quality, maybe anxiety? Meaning the more that you focus on money and look to it as a source of security, the more tempted you'll be to worry?
Carl, that's a great suggestion, and I should have thought about it. Anxiety would be the 10th result of loving money. If you have too much, you worry about what you're going to do with it. If you have too little, you worry about how you're going to get it. You worry about whether people are going to take it away from you. You worry about whether your investments are going to increase. You fear that they're going to decrease. No, you set your heart on money, and money begins to own you, and that is a formula for living with anxiety. People do live with anxiety over money, even when they have a surplus, fearing that they might lose it. People who have less than they need, who overspend and put themselves in debt, worry about money and have every right to as well, in one sense, because they've been careless with it. How do we deal with the anxieties of life that are produced by money as well as many other things? I want to remind you about a book called Anxious for Nothing. Anxious for nothing. The Bible says, be anxious for nothing. Don't worry about anything. Worrying about what God provides, both materially and spiritually, is not necessary. I actually believe you can live a worry-free life. In fact, I believe God wants you to live a worry-free life. We're not talking about health and wealth and prosperity, some false promises. We're talking about how to live a life without anxiety, no matter what the issues are. The book, Anxious for Nothing. We're going to send this free for a limited time to anyone contacting us for the first time. This is a limited time offer. But if you've never contacted this ministry, here is a book that has been one of the most popular resources of this ministry for decades, titled Anxious for Nothing. If you've never contacted us, we'll send it to you free. Contact us today.
God has given you the resources, the spiritual means that you need to live worry-free. To help you take hold of those resources, pick up John's book, Anxious for Nothing. Again, it's free if you've never contacted us before. Please get in touch today. Send an email request to letters@gty.org or use the regular mail writing to Grace to You, Box 4000, Panorama City, California, 91412. You can also use the toll-free number, available anytime, 24 hours a day, 1-800-55-GRACE. Again, the book is called Anxious for Nothing, and it's yours free if you're contacting us for the first time. Ask for a copy as you send an email to letters@gty.org or by writing Box 4000, Panorama City, California, 91412, or call toll-free 1-800-55-GRACE. If you have written or called before, Anxious for Nothing costs $10.50 and shipping is free. Order by calling 1-800-55-GRACE or go to the website gty.org. While you're online, remember that you can download any of John's sermons, 3,000 total, free in MP3 or transcript format. Our website also has a blog that features articles by John and other staff members that will help you think biblically about some of the most important issues facing the church today. All that and more is free online at gty.org. And now, for John MacArthur and the staff, I'm your host, Carl Miller, inviting you back tomorrow for another half hour of Unleashing God's Truth, one verse at a time, on Grace to You. So how do you get money? Yes, that's the subject of John MacArthur's address tomorrow. Make sure that you're here as he continues the study, Whose Money Is It Anyway? On the next Grace to You.